no more people on the speakers list, we'll get started with the forum. I realized I didn't introduce myself. I'm Michael Henry. I'm the chair of the Ann Arbor Democratic Party. And today,
please ask the candidates to speak loud and clear.
Sure. Can you hear me okay, Doug?
Can
you hear me? I'll speak louder, too.
Amen. Also, if everybody in the back would kindly do two things. First, if there's any chairs vacant, sit down. Yeah. And secondly, shut up.
Awesome. Well done, David. Okay, so we've done this forum many times for judicial candidates, city council candidates. It's the first time I've actually had a chance to do it for mayoral candidates, so this is awesome. And, you know, I didn't want to do it alone, so I asked a fine gentleman named Jim Simpson. He's a senior product manager at Duo Security, a local business in town, kind of born and bred here. The property owner, so thanks, Jim, for joining us. And, he's quite prepared, so don't be afraid of his tough questions, but we're going to both co-moderate. And some of the rules here are that the candidates will have a 90-second opening statement, a 90-second closing statement. They will have 60 seconds to answer the questions that Jim and I ask. 60 seconds, but we'll also reserve the right for a 30-second follow-up. And managing, you know, time and fairness will be at our discretion together. We encourage the candidates not to engage each other, but to speak to the audience or speak to us. And we hope for a cordial and fair and informative candidate forum. So the other piece is that Jim and I are probably going to ask somewhere between 8 and 10 questions, depending on how quickly they answer. And if they don't filibuster, then that would be awesome. If they do, it will hurt your chances of getting to ask your questions. So I suggest you all don't do that, because they'll be angry. There will be index cards floating around, and as the forum, Nora has them, as the forum progresses, I'm sure you'll develop questions in your minds, and you'll want to jot something down. When you jot it down, please, you know, try to print. It's difficult. I'm not a great reader. No, I'm kidding. But it is difficult for me to read some of the questions sometimes. So you just take your time and write it. Also, try to make it a question that everybody can answer. Don't ask pointed questions that are designed to kind of attack any individual candidate, because we will not ask those. We'll bury them. And then at the end, if we get through, so we're hoping to probably get through about 10 of your questions, maybe 15 of them, depending on how fast they answer. And then at the end, we may have 1 or 2 questions from the audience if there's time. Okay? So is that clear, the format? Does that make sense to everybody? Awesome. So we shall get started. So,
I'm sorry, move in front of the candidate so they can see me.
So, keep an eye on Susan.
Thank you. Oh, God,
we'll
this is so close.
Down
so intimate. Mike, if I could, would a 30-15 be okay with everybody?
Awesome.
Okay.
The other piece that I forgot is that we had a random selection of our numbers, and so I know Christopher selected number 1, so he'll go first. Sally has number 2, Sabre has number 3, and Steve has number 4, correct? All right. Awesome.
So, Mike, make sure you tell me how much time for each, so I can operate this fancy technology.
All right. Mm-hmm. So, 90 seconds for your statements, and we'll start with Christopher Taylor.
Excellent. Thank you very much, and I'm delighted to be here. I am Christopher Taylor. I'm a 3-term council member from the 3rd Ward. I'm a lifelong Democrat, getting my start in electoral politics in 1987, working on the short but beautiful campaign of Paul Simon in Chicago. Like I said, I've been on the city council for 6 years now, and I sort of think that the city's, I think we're going in the right direction. You know, we're far from perfect. It's not Elysium, it's Ann Arbor. We live in Michigan, but I think we're doing the right things for the most part. We have improvements, but we can be confident that we're doing all right. If I'm elected mayor, I'd like to work on 2 piles of things, broadly speaking. Number 1, all the basic stuff that that simply is the city's pleasure and obligation to provide: public safety, streets, snow, water, you know, all the infrastructure that's underneath the ground. These are things that we simply have to work on, we simply have to get better at. But on the other hand, we could spend every last nickel we have on these things. They still wouldn't be perfect, and the city would be kind of a boring place. So if I'm elected mayor, I also work on affordable housing. I've been on the Parks Commission for 6 years, and our parks need to be beautiful and well-maintained. We can't stop climate change in the city, but we can. We ought to do our part, and we ought to make sure to help residents and businesses do theirs. Finally, I'm a supporter of public transit, non-motorized transit. These are things we have to work on. And an attractive and vibrant downtown. Our downtown is our core. It's a jewel. It also has a character. And we have to find a way to balance that character with our growth. In 20 years, if we don't recognize the place, it's going to be a problem. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm Sally Hart Peterson, and I'm running for mayor. In order to bring new leadership and a new plan to Ann Arbor that will transform the economic growth that's ahead of us into much-needed revenue to pay for our priorities. These priorities, we've talked about them quite a bit. They include better roads. They include more beat cops downtown. They include safer mobility for motorists, pedestrians, cyclists, and for runners. There are two main components that reflect two of my priorities in this campaign. One is developing an economic strategy to grow jobs in Ann Arbor. I don't know how we can expect to fill our potholes without an economic strategy. The Washtenaw County Economic Development Report tells us that 12,500 jobs are coming to the county in the next 3 years. I want those jobs to come to Ann Arbor, but where are we going to put them? The plan, the economic strategy will involve a plan to redevelop the downtown and our business quarters in ways that preserve the character and heritage of our community. The second piece is working more strategically with U of M. Ann Arbor is always going to be a fine place to live, work, and play because of all the jobs that they provide us and all the cultural diversity that they provide us. But they don't fill our potholes, and their police can't even enforce local ordinances. So they're going to have a new president. We're going to have a new mayor. It's time for a new attitude to really balance the town-gown relationships. Thank you.
Good morning. Those of you who don't know me, I'm Sabra. Most of you know me. That's because I come to nearly every Democratic Party meeting. And have been doing it long before I ran for council for the first time. When people ask me why I want to be mayor, I have to admit it, there are so many reasons and there are so many opportunities that it's often difficult for me to narrow it down to a 30-second soundbite. But here's your soundbite. I want all of the residents of Ann Arbor to not just live here but thrive here. And as mayor, I'll be committed to working full-time to meet the demands of the future and meet the needs of today. My style of leadership begins by respectfully engaging members of the community. If you look at my record on council, you can see that I've used this commitment to listening as the starting point for all the decisions I make. And I've made each decision thoughtfully and carefully and independently. Real leadership comes from recognizing problems, finding solutions, and never being afraid to admit that maybe the decision you made was wrong and reconsider it. And as council members, we have all confronted whether our decisions were right. I've never been even slightly hesitant to see the flaws in the decisions, which is why I proposed revising the downtown zoning. I remain grateful that members of council agreed with me. See, I can't do it in 90 seconds. my ability to rethink, to consider, to evaluate is such a value to this community because you are all my advisors, and I appreciate that. As mayor, I will continue to listen not just to my friends and not just to your friends, but to everybody.
Thank you, sir. Next up is Stephen Cunningham.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you all for coming. I really also want to thank my colleagues here on, at this mayoral forum. I think it really does inspire all of us to get out and vote when we have competition. And this is probably the most competitive mayoral race we've probably seen in decades, for sure. I'm Stephen Kunstelman. And I also want to thank my wife, who is the dynamo behind my politics here in Ann Arbor, Letitia Kunstelman over here. Without her, I would not have the courage to stand before all of you. But that being said, I want to thank you for considering my candidacy for the office of mayor. I am honored that you are interested in my policy positions and that as a three-term elected official here in Ann Arbor. I want to make sure that you know that I've been a strong and effective voice for all Ann Arbor residents. common sense and fiscal responsibility is the basis of governing. I believe in fairness and equity in the distribution of the city's limited financial and staff resources and have been a consistent advocate for investment in our infrastructure and funding of our parks and rebuilding of our public safety department. If elected mayor, I will continue to work cooperatively and graciously with my council colleagues with an emphasis on open and vigorous debate of all issues facing our great city. I am proud and humbled to have the trust, support, and endorsement of the following Ann Arbor City Council members: Sumi Kalasapathy of Ward 1, Mike Englund of Ward 5, Jane Lum of Ward 2, and Jack Eaton of Ward 4. I am confident that as mayor, I will prioritize public health, safety, and welfare as we all expect and as I have always done. Thank you.
All right, so I'm going to ask the first question. That's our moderator, and we'll go to Sally Hart Peterson. Each of the candidates will also get this question.
How long do we have in this one?
60 seconds.
60 seconds.
This one, we'll give a little longer because it's an important question. I'd like you to say something nice about each of your candidates.
Yeah.
I'd like you to say something nice about the other candidates in the race.
Okay.
60 seconds.
When do I start?
Now.
Okay, now. So the first thing I'd like to say that's nice about Christopher Taylor is that 2 years ago when I ran for city council, and I'm going to say something nice about him and the mayor together. I ran against a very popular incumbent 2 years ago. I think of it as running for a seat at the table, not against anyone in particular. But after the election, Mayor Heefja and Christopher Taylor were two of the first people that welcomed me to city council. And I didn't expect to be received with such open, well, I don't know how open the arms are. Your wingspan's pretty big, right? So I felt very welcome despite the race. Sabra, I want to say she and I are alike in terms of truly listening to our constituents. And she really takes, she's genuine in her ability and her meaningfulness in terms of really valuing the input from our constituents. Steve also has also been very kind to me on council. There are a lot of good things I can say about you. I appreciate your sense of humor and your candor and your integrity and your courage.
Well done. Thank you.
Well done.
No need for that. Let's not do any more applause, please. It'll save us time. Sabri, same question to you. Would you say something nice about
me? Oh, you're shifting this around.
Well, sure.
Okay.
Mix it up.
I enjoy Steve Kunzelman, his humor, his integrity, but mostly I enjoy the fact that he challenges people's preconceived notions. It's extraordinarily valuable to me to listen to him bring issues forward that I might miss. Chris Taylor speaks Latin. And I've got to tell you, for those of us who are really into grammatically constructed sentences and enjoy a good turn of phrase here and there, there's no one better than Chris. Sally not only brings her interest and her intellect to the table, but she also brings a genuine sense of personal responsibility. I appreciate that. And each of us does the best we can, and believe me, it's sometimes challenging to remain polite and genuine and interested at 2 in the morning.
Well done. Steve, same question to you, sir. Say something nice about your...
You know, I've been working with my colleagues for at least a couple years, if not up to 6 years, I think, and I appreciate the stamina and the courage and the ability to work with, you know, others on council and the public. You know, Sabre and I go back all the way, 7 years ago, I think, in 2007. And her and Mike and Ron and I were, you know, I would say the minority on council, and we did quite well to change the direction. And I really appreciate Sabre standing up for that effort. Chris, I was very humbled and honored when he beat me, right? Because I think it showed that, you know, he was reaching out to the voters. At the same time, you know, he's a very polite person, and you know, when the game is done at the table, You know, we still know that it's not personal. This is politics. There's nothing personal going on. And I think that's important as we work towards solving our city's issues. And Sally is a fresh voice. Sally has been certainly, you know, wanting to really strive hard to change the tone and the tenor of the politics in Ann Arbor and the political culture, and I really appreciate her efforts on that.
Thank you, Steve. Well done.
That was a great first question.
Kristen, your turn.
Thank you.
Something next.
Well, going in order, Steve and I probably agree on the 10% of things that come before council. But similarly, you know, I enjoy sitting next to him a lot. You know, I think we have a good personal relationship in that regard. And it's nice knowing that you can have a pal who appreciates some of the absurdities of the process and perhaps an occasional colleague or two. So, you know, Steve, I enjoy working with him in that regard. I'd like to kind of put Sally and Sabre a little bit together. Both of them are thoughtful and engaged and work with constituents. That is, you know, I think I share that as well, but I think that they exemplify it. It's an important part of the representative process. It's an important part of politics, and they both do it really well.
Wow.
I've been lumped together.
Okay, so I have the next question here. And first, I wanted to say thank you for being council members. I watch you guys every 2 weeks, so I feel like...
Jim, you've got to talk louder.
Okay, sorry. I feel like I'm in my lower register already. But I just want to say really quickly, thank you for being council members. I feel like we're old friends because I tune in every 2 weeks to see what they have to say. And so it's great to have an opportunity to have a dialogue up here. My first question to you is... Many, if not all of you, have talked about balancing basic services, downtown, and other concerns. What does that actually mean for you? And I'll start with Chris.
Sure. Broadly speaking, it means we have a limited set of resources, and we can't overemphasize one set of priorities over the other. Basic services, I think, deserve the lion's share because they are, in fact, basic. The city has an obligation to provide essential services to the city, and it ought to do so in a consistent and efficient manner. At the same time, we're not a basic place, and so we need to do what we can to engage these other priorities, to improve affordable housing, to make sure our parks are beautiful, to do what we can with respect to climate change and the use of the improvement of a renewable energy in our community. We also have to, I think, expand transit and do what we can with respect to non-motorized and pedestrian safety. Finding that balance is really just a question of allocating resources, allocating staff time, and allocating political attention.
Sally?
I'll go on just a second. Okay. So this question is really about, again, priorities versus downtown versus in the neighborhoods, and services downtown and services in the neighborhood. And I think that's sort of how some of the factions on City Council have aligned, pro-neighborhood versus pro-downtown. We need a vibrant downtown that belongs to every person of every generation, millennials, retirees, families, visitors. But we also need very strong neighborhoods and good infrastructure in our neighborhoods. There is a philosophy that a strong downtown means strong neighborhoods. I don't think we feel that today when we look at the conditions of our infrastructure in our road. And so we need to have a mayor who's going to bridge that divide. I truly believe that if we have an economic strategy, an economic development plan, we can have prudent redevelopment downtown and along our business quarters in a way that raises the level of revenue that we have in the city to take care of our neighborhoods.
Okay. The only way I know to balance both basic services and the change, not just downtown but in the city, is through good planning. One of the difficulties we have is to see 40 years ahead. Most of us are doing really well to look 6 months ahead. Some of us have trouble looking 2 weeks ahead. But when the city makes decisions, we have to make decisions that are long-term. And we have to keep those long-term decisions in mind. In some cases, that means rethinking the way we've done infrastructure in the past to adapt to a changing world. In some cases, that means really thinking about the impact of a new development. I don't believe there is a difference between making a healthy downtown and making a healthy community. I think if we aren't making it possible for people to live in our community, to walk the streets, to feel that they are secure, and frankly, to not have water in their basement, then we have failed to do our job. It's not one or the other. It's a balance, and it's always important to find that balance.
Well, thank you very much. I'm going to put on the hat that I once wore when I was a township employee in Sumter Township for 10 years, and I served as a city administrator. And I supervised a number of employees, police, the fire, the volunteer department, water department. I still hold my certified water distribution system operator license from the state of Michigan. And I think what I'm really pleased to hear, to listening to my colleagues here, is talking about how we need to refocus on our basic infrastructure, because for too long, for the last number of years, we have not. And I think that this quote in my literature basically says it. Our roads are crumbling, our water mains are breaking, our street trees are neglected, all the while our public works director attends public art commission meetings. Let's prioritize our infrastructure first. That's been the problem for so many years. It has not been a priority. We have watched our council votes steer resources downtown. We've been focusing on downtown. Our staff has been focusing on downtown. And I've been advocating that our neighborhoods have been suffering. I'm fortunate that my advocacy has been working, because this summer I'm getting new water mains, new roads, and new storm sewer on my street because they have been failing for years and years, and it's time that we take that direction to the rest of the city.
Thank you. I'm going to go off the script a little bit for my prepared questions. Sally brought up something regarding faction on council. Sally brought up an item related to factions on council. If you were to become mayor, how would you manage that environment of these factions?
It's about building bridges, and one of the things that I've learned in my background, and I have a lot of experience in the business world and in the nonprofit sector as well, and it is incumbent upon any leader to know how to build those bridges, to listen, to achieve consensus when there is disagreement, and to find common ground. And that's something that makes successful business leaders successful, and in the nonprofit world as well, especially when funding priorities are constrained. So I think it's important for the next mayor to... And I personally have not been aligned with either faction. People who know me, I research the issues. I look at both sides. I sometimes meet with the opposition in order to understand where everybody's perspectives are coming from, and then to try to find the common ground. So, again, I'm not in the sort of pro-downtown, pro-neighborhood factions. I vote for what I think is best for all of Ann Arbor, and I think my voting record suggest that.
Thank you. Christopher.
In order to improve relations on council, I think you need to just extend an open hand to everyone without regard to perceived faction. It's been my practice on council, particularly as I'm running for mayor, for example, I'll get a constituent question from someone in the 4th ward or someone in the 5th ward. I'm on their doorstep. I'm going to help them take care of their problems. So I'm going to work with staff on it by identifying the issue to staff. But it is always my practice to make sure that I CC for visibility the current existing council members, so that council member, without regard to perceived alliance, can build a relationship with the constituent and help work on the problem. I see this as noting that we're all in this together, are working towards common goals. It's also my practice when drafting a resolution, whether it's a feel-good resolution or whether it's a resolution that's more contested, I do what I can to open up that resolution for co-sponsorship without regard to, again, perceived faction. This way, I think it helps folks know that, like I said, we're all in this together. We're trying to work for common goals. If this is something that you agree with and like to work with me on, I'd be delighted to work on it with you. I think with that open hand moving forward, that the perceived differences can be diminished.
Thank you. Same question to Sabre regarding factions developing on council. If you were to become mayor, how would you manage those relationships?
We're Democrats. And the funny thing about Democrats, in my experience, is that we always break up into factions. It doesn't bother me at all that we have factions, but I'm really resistant to joining one. It's important that as we work together that we look at each other's strengths and build on those strengths rather than attack each other's weaknesses. It's very easy in politics to see the other elected officials as your potential rivals. It's a very bad move when it comes to making policy. As mayor, I will continue to do what I have done, work with each and every member of council, talk with each person, and listen to the community as a whole, and make my own decisions.
Thank you. Stephen, same question to you. How would you manage the factions on council if you were to become mayor?
Well, I think as I started out with the opening statement, I have the support of four other council members. Not because we vote as a faction, but because they have the trust that when I tell them something that I'm going to do or that I want to do, they believe me because I do it, okay? We work together. Trust is the most important thing as a politician, because you have to have the trust of the voter, but you also have to have the trust of your colleagues on council. We're not a social group. We don't meet outside of council to develop our relationships. We show up at our council meetings to vote on agenda items. And as part of that, we have to have the trust, knowing that we are working together. I think everybody knows that none of my emails that have been FOIA'd have been published disparaging other colleagues on council. That I have worked to make sure that I'm very open and transparent. I don't work to work on something and then plop it on the table after it's been told to the city attorney's office to not communicate to other council members. It has to be open and transparent, and that's where I will lead the effort as mayor, as I have done as a council member.
A little follow-up there. So begs the question, is there a trust issue between some of the folks that are supporting you and the folks that aren't?
Are you talking about me?
Yeah. You brought up trust. You stressed it a few times. So is there a trust issue right now?
There is a trust issue between me and my opponents here on the table. I think that is very clear.
Okay.
I think that's. I think I'm the only one that is not striving to have the support of John Heath's supporters. So, and I think that's the big difference when we go into this election. That there's a huge issue of political culture that needs to change in Ann Arbor, one that needs to build back that trust. You have to remember the political culture was about isolating those that opposed John Heathja. The idea that, remember, I'm the most experienced politician because I've had the most primary campaigns because I've always had an opponent supported by John Heathja's supporters. And I think that's the big difference that we have going into this mayoral campaign.
John who?
our current mayor, John Heathja.
Forget it.
Thanks.
Okay, so I have a somewhat related follow-up to that. This is a question that came from the audience.
Excuse me, the people are having a really hard time hearing.
Okay.
Can you hear me okay now?
Well, yeah. You're talking low and fast.
I turned on the air. That's part of the problem because I didn't want to get too hot here. So, sorry.
So you have to really exert more because it's
right.
Hard for
Stand up.
So what are the two most important differences you see between serving as a city council member and serving as a mayor? And we'll start with Sabra.
I don't even get a minute to think. Okay. I don't want you to have trouble hearing me. The two most important differences between serving as a council member and serving as mayor. One, mayor sets the tone for the council. And that means the more cooperative, the more inclusive, the more collegial the mayor is, the better the chances the council can be behaving in the same fashion. The other significant difference is that council members are very responsive to their individual constituents, and they should be. But the mayor needs to be responsive to the entire city. I have experience working with people all over this city, but I also have experience solving problems for people all over this city. I'm not parochial. I'm not interested in only my peeps, my friends, my neighbors, but the entire community and how we plan for the community to work together in the future. That's a very valuable and important skill.
Thank you. Steve.
The biggest difference between being mayor and being a council member is that the mayor runs the meetings. Right? The mayor is the parliamentarian of a council meeting. And so we have to trust that the mayor is running the meeting fairly, openly, and transparently. And we've had some situations that I've called out where that has not happened by our existing mayor. And I'm pretty confident that all of us will certainly set that tone. But we have to, knowing that I've had that experience and knowing when to call it out, I think that's where my experience as mayor, or will be mayor, will certainly be able to set that tone. That Saber, and I totally agree with what Saber says, that the mayor sets the tone for the community and sets the tone for the council meetings. And again, we have 2 council meetings a month, and we have to get through the business, and we have to have somebody who is going to be efficient and be fair and give everybody an opportunity to express their opinion, but then hold the vote.
Yes. The mayor represents the city, broadly speaking, in a way that the sitting council member does not. The council member has direct constituents with one ward. The mayor is represents the entire city and therefore has to has a higher obligation to view a broader set of interests and incorporate that into their decision-making. Also, the mayor serves, if you will, as head of state, as secretary of state in the city. The mayor's obligation and pleasure is to work with other entities, whether it's the state, the county, or the university. An important aspect of serving as mayor is a fluidity and facility and ability to represent the city properly, to advocate for the city properly in these contexts.
Thank you. Before I answer this question, I want to clarify something I said in the response to the previous question. I think I heard myself say that I'm not part of the pro-downtown and not part of the pro-neighborhood factions. I am very much pro-downtown, and I'm very much pro-neighborhood. What I meant to say is that I'm not part of either one of the factions, and I'm not anti-anything. So I just want to clarify that. Second thing is what my fellow council members and candidates have said are all. I agree with all of them. I'm not going to repeat what they say about how my role as a city council member versus how that would change versus my role as a mayor. One very clear definition or distinction that hasn't been mentioned is the amount of time spent in City Hall. Ironically, I think my life will be much easier as mayor because I will have an office in City Hall. City Council members don't have an office. Hopefully I would have some administrative support as well. So I think that the amount of time spent in City Hall, being present, being the leader, day in and day out, is one of the most important visible distinctions between being mayor and being a city council member.
Thank you. A number of you have spoken about affordable housing, and numerous reports have documented the inadequate stock of affordable housing within the city limits. In fact, a lot of people would argue that Ypsilanti and Pittsfield Township are Ann Arbor's affordable housing. How would you address the inadequate stock of affordable housing within the city limits? And we'll start with Steve.
Well, thank you very much. You know, the affordable housing issue is one that has never been solved in Ann Arbor. It's something that we've been talking about for decades. We can talk about the library lot and the effort to do, the Y lot and try to build 100 units of affordable housing next to a luxury hotel. We know that that failed. We know that previous to that, in the prior decade, if you look at the history, when the county bought the single room occupancy of the Y, which is now the county building annex, the advocacies were coming out saying we need to protect affordable housing in the city. I grew up in Ann Arbor. My mom and I lived downtown in Ann Arbor next to Liberty Plaza when she was a single mother and I was about 4 years old. We're never going to have that opportunity again, I believe, when a single mother and her child can live in downtown Ann Arbor now that rents are up to, $1,000 a bed in these luxury student buildings. What we can do, though, is refocus on the Ann Arbor Housing Commission, which is what I've been striving for a number of years. We have been too focused on trying to do these big projects somewhere else or downtown on the most expensive land. We have to be very cognizant of the realities. Expensive land is not going to be used for the affordable housing.
Why is that a reality? Let me push back a little bit. Why is it a reality if it's a city-owned property? Or why is that a reality? That land can be used for affordable housing.
That's because reality is that the economics of using the most expensive land to build the most affordable housing has to come from subsidies. And the subsidies have not been, as we all know, the subsidies are being cut back every year by the feds, HUD, and the state. So, and if this has been an issue that has been going on for decades in Ann Arbor. What we have done is forget and neglect the Ann Arbor Housing Commission, which is the largest provider of affordable housing in our community. We are now again going in the direction of at least making sure that they have some proper financing to rebuild their buildings and at least provide affordable housing that is in decent shape, which has been a problem for a number of years.
Thank you. Sabra, same question to you.
Which question?
About affordable housing. Numerous reports have documented the inadequate stocks of affordable housing within the city limits. How would you address this problem?
I would continue to do what I've been doing since I got on council. There are two issues with affordable housing. The first is the maintenance of the housing stock we have. The second is the creation of new housing stock. It's not all public housing. Public housing is owned by you. But there's a number of other mechanisms for affordable housing that are owned by other entities, whether those are Don Farm or Avalon, whether they're supportive housing or whether they're simply workforce, that's a great term, workforce housing. There's a number of other moving issues. What I've done is not only work pretty much alone, in my view, but who knows, on improving the funding for emergency shelter, improving the funding for our housing commission, which handles our public housing. And I have advocated very strongly that the housing, the affordable housing fund get increased with the profits from the sale of development rights. And that is the one-time money that we can use that doesn't take money away from all the other things that we think are important. It doesn't take money from parks or police. It doesn't take money from roads. It doesn't take money from lights or streets. It takes money from prospective developers and puts it aside for us to use to build and maintain our existing housing stock.
Thank you. Chris?
Our public housing in Ann Arbor has not lived up to our expectations, and I'm delighted that we're moving forward with mechanisms to put millions of dollars of more capital into the Ann Arbor Housing Commission so that they can build their, they can build and refurbish their units. That's great. Moving forward, we have opportunities on the public side and on the private side. On the public side, the former juvenile center on Platt Road, I believe, is an excellent opportunity for expanded affordable housing to work with the county. It's a location that is right next to County Farm Park. It's right next to transportation. It's right next to public transportation, right next to employment. It's exactly the sort of place, and there's, I think, a material amount of neighborhood engagement in the process in figuring out whether and how this would be a great place to build, a meaningful and accessible unit of family affordable housing. With respect to affordable housing generally, the market is the market, and it's very difficult to fight it. I think we need to incentivize developers not to build student housing downtown through residential premiums, but rather use the premiums that we have and available to have them build workforce housing. Thank you.
Thank you. Same question to you, Sally.
So I am strongly in favor of replenishing the stock and increasing the stock of affordable housing within the city of Ann Arbor. It is affordable housing is very clearly a budget priority and one that we have been honoring as city council when we assign proceeds from the sale of city-owned buildings to affordable housing. It's an important thing that we're doing, and we should continue to look for these kinds of opportunities. What hasn't been said, which I think we also need to consider, and this came up this week with respect to the potential for affordable housing on Platt Road. I've got two emails this week from constituents who are concerned about that happening. There is fear of who might live there. Will those people be felons? Or, who are the people that are going to be living there? We need to demystify affordable housing, and we need to be able to have a conversation that we can bring it out to the open and feel comfortable that we know what we're talking about. I spent some time this week talking to Mary Jo Callen, Director of Office of Economic Development. She helped me understand that there is going to be a very robust community engagement process for the Platt Road site, and I'll wrap it up. But I think we need to have that dialogue in the open more often to demystify affordable housing and make it more acceptable in this community.
I'm curious, though, what was your response to the people that were worried about people,
my response was very clearly, here's my attitude on affordable housing, and that is we need to increase the stock. It is a solution to a problem, not a creation of a problem. I think people thought that we put in affordable housing and I won't be able to push my baby in a stroller by County Farm Park anymore. And I said that the new model for affordable housing, where we co-locate services and staff on site, like we're trying to do with, I think it's Miller Maple.
Miller Manor.
That we're trying to, again, co-locate the services and the staff, and so that it's a solution to a problem rather than a creation of a problem. I also suggested they contact Andy LaBarre if they want to be part of, shout out to Andy LaBarre, if they want to be become part of the community engagement process that is going to design the affordable housing on the 13-acre site if the county decides to hold on to the property, that they should contact Andy and, again, become part of the dialogue, part of the solution.
Okay. So we've talked a bit about affordable housing and residential development downtown, and I'm curious that, and this is based on my background, there are a lot of companies that choose to locate themselves in downtown Ann Arbor because of the amenities it offers and the talent that it attracts. But once those companies grow past a certain point, the options for them become a lot fewer to stay within the city. And I'm curious, we've seen all of this development happening downtown that's residential. What part does the city have to play in terms of encouraging commercial development? And I'll start with Sally.
Sure. Good question. So I have been thinking quite a bit about the scarcity of large floor plate office space downtown. It's a reality. And so what do we need to do in terms of allowing growing companies to stay in Ann Arbor? I look at our business corridors. I look at North Main Street. The North Main Street Huron River Task Force did a very comprehensive assessment about river use on North Main Street. And it did talk about the opportunity to rezone. And I think that we really do need to rezone North Main Street. It is ripe for redevelopment. I've attended recently the Huron River Watershed State of the Huron River report and heard that for communities in Michigan who build on their rivers, to expect a 3-to-1 to 6-to-1 return on investment. So North Main Street, a very important corridor into downtown, it is ripe for redevelopment to create more large floor plate office space, same with State Street as well.
Chris.
I think it's terrific that there are so many vibrant and active businesses downtown. I think they have come downtown to use the existing office space that we have now because downtown is such a wonderful place, because, frankly, there's parking that's available for them through the parking that we've invested in. Our parking system is an economic development tool that has been well utilized. As these companies grow, they need more space. If the market were such that it was profitable or practical for buildings to be constructed to serve this need, then people who own property downtown would choose to do it. They have not yet done so. There's limited large plate office space coming in proposed in the Dahlman building on the old Wylon. I'm looking forward to that. But broadly speaking, the city, I think, can serve to facilitate businesses coming downtown, offices that exist there. If property owners have plans on what they need in order to build new large plate office space downtown, I'd be eager to open, But broadly speaking, I view this as a market problem that the city is ill-equipped to solve just like that on its own.
Sabra?
I'm kind of glad that we're just going down the line. It's a lot easier for me to keep track of where I am. Our zoning downtown incentivizes residential. It makes building residential very easy. And it doesn't make building large floor plate office space easy. It doesn't make building commercial space easy. But it makes building more residential easy. And it does so because we as a community said we wanted amenities downtown. And we were told in order to have those amenities downtown, which we can consider questionable, we need lots more people living downtown. Well, that was the reality we faced a decade ago, and now we're looking at whether we're getting what we want. One of the things that I've done is make certain that we go back and take a really hard look at the incentive program for downtown development to see if we are indeed getting what we want. But as we talk about building on corridors, we have to look at the impact additional traffic on those corridors will bring and whether those corridors are even accessible. One of the challenges we have for building on the river is that that's a state-owned road, and it's extraordinarily difficult to get onto Main Street from any of the adjacent properties, and extraordinarily dangerous.
One quick follow-up, Sabra. Which downtown amenities are do you consider questionable?
There's a couple of interesting limits on zoning today. In D1, everybody gets what's called a 400 FAR, floor area ratio, which means the lot size times 4 is how big a building you can build. You can build that building in any configuration up to, depending on where it is, 150, 180 feet, but you only get 4 times the lot size unless you add additional FAR through meeting one of the incentive programs. But you get 300 FAR just for putting in residential. So if you do the 400 base plate and the 300, you've reached 700 FAR, which is 7 times the area of your lot. And honestly, that's all you can build anyway. So there's no incentive for office. There's no incentive for commercial. There's incentive for making a greener building. There's incentive for pedestrian amenities, and the big thing everything is geared around is building more residential.
Steve? How can we inspire commercial development? One is, obviously, we need to make sure that our zoning is up to date, which I believe it is. And I'm not, you know, let's talk about what we have today. All right, our parking system is subsidized by millions of tax dollars. All right, the DDA has to transfer property TIF dollars over to the parking system because of the underground parking structure debt. With all that money going into the parking system, that is all public. All right, because of the way that bond sale was packaged, we got we borrowed $50 million to get 500 additional spaces and 4 blocks of streetscape. If we want, but there's plenty of land for commercial development. Right? I led the effort to sell the Y lot. It's available and it's been sold to Delman. For the library lot is now listed for sale. Plenty of space and plenty of air rights to get development there. There's the Brown lot. There's the budget rental lot. There's the First Martin lot across from City Hall. There is property downtown that the commercial development interests can use. It has nothing to do with city council. The only reason we've got all this residential luxury student housing downtown is because the U of M increased their enrollment by 5,000 students in the last decade. That's what's driving the market. Let's not think that council has some sort of handle and control and can inspire this luxury student housing, but it's all driven by the U of M.
You know, I got a follow-up on that. So is there a relationship that the city can have with the U of M to influence it? Or should there be a relationship there? Or are we just powerless as a city and as voters?
Well, we are a company town. Let's not forget that. U of M and Ann Arbor are a company town. We have seen more private businesses leave Ann Arbor in the last few decades than we've seen move in. We saw Bechtel move out of Wolverine Tower. We've seen Pfizer sell off, North Campus. So we are going in the direction of being more of a company town, and so I think we're more beholden. What is our relationship? Well, the U of M is its own entity, and they're constitutionally created by the state. We have to have a good relationship with them, but they are going to do what they need to do best, and that is provide education to the masses and to the global. I think what we're dealing with is the global economy in that regard. But we certainly need to have a board of regents that is cognizant that if they keep growing and keep buying property in the city of Ann Arbor, that they're going to basically kill the goose that laid the golden egg, because all of these amenities about a nice downtown is just going to be nothing more than a student food court, and that's not going to provide for the rest of us that live in our neighborhoods.
Okay, let me ask that question to the rest of you as well. What should be the relationship with the university, and is there anything that city council and the mayor's office could do to engage the university? All right, we'll start this out.
This is one of my core priorities for mayor. They said before, the university's going to have a new president, we're going to have a new mayor, it's time for a new attitude on the town-gown relationships. Mm-hmm. I noticed when I was running for city council 2 years ago, very clearly that there was a lot of resentment from the city toward the university because they don't pay taxes. The reason why we don't have productive dialogue at the mayor's office and the president's office now is because it seems like the city is always wanting to start the dialogue with payment in lieu of taxes or some combination of payment. And we need to get over that. We need to stop being angry at the U for not paying taxes. That's not their job. What we do need to do is work with them on issues of mutual interest, job creation, transportation, infrastructure, quality of life. those are all things that they have said that they will come to the table and have a dialogue with us on. We need to come to the table with an open mind and to not start every dialogue with a request for payment in lieu of taxes.
Thank you. Christopher, same question to you during the relationship with the university and engaging.
Yeah, I think that this gets to the head of state question that I touched upon before. It is a new day. There will be a new mayor, a new president, and we need to work with the university as best we can on areas of mutual interest. University is going to do what the university is going to do. They have a separate mission. They have a separate set of constituents, a separate set of stakeholders. Their interest in helping the city is limited. What we need to do is work with them on those areas and educate them about the impact that they have. A very brief story. Brandon spoke to a number of council members at one point talking about the hockey game coming to the Big House. He was describing how great it was going to be for the city. Restaurants, hotels, all people come here, thousands of people coming during the winter. That's going to be great. And in one respect, it's absolutely true, and we're delighted to have those folks here. On the other hand, from an organizational perspective, from the city side, it was all cost. We're not getting any money from that. We're not getting any help from that, but the additional services we're going to have to provide. He had no sense about that, no understanding. We need to communicate to them what they're doing, how it impacts us, and then because I think, broadly speaking, we have, they're not evil. They just don't understand. And so we just need to help them understand what they're doing, what our needs are, and I believe that we can move forward more effectively.
Thank you. Sabre, same question to you.
Okay. So I think every one of us up here is affiliated at one time or another with the University of Michigan, including me. But I'll tell you what the university thinks of us. Jim Kosteva and I spoke at the same meeting once, and he referred to the relationship between the city and the university as the university is the husband, the city is the wife, and sometimes the husband does something that really irritates the wife. And so he handed me a bouquet of flowers and candy to play makeup. This is an attitude at the university. I don't want to educate the university. These are highly educated people. But it was an attitude of the past. New president, new person addressing the president as mayor, absolutely true. But you have to come in knowing what you want. I have no needs from the university. They have needs from the city. And what I want out of the university is not their money. It's not their infrastructure. It's not their property. What I want out of the university is their brains. And I want their brains to focus here on the city, too. And that's the kind of collaboration I'm looking for.
Thank you.
All right. So speaking of other governmental entities, we have a question about from the audience. If elected, what would your relationship be with the DDA? Start with Steve.
I have a great relationship with the DDA because we have a lot of respect for each other. I believe the DDA needs to be accountable to the law, and I think they understand my position. I think that the DDA board needs to understand that they are subservient to the city council that confirms their appointments. The DDA is a very important institution, and I don't think any of us on council or as candidates for mayor have been advocating for the dissolution of the DDA. But I do believe that we've seen that the DDA has been giving us excuses for things that I don't believe are true. One is they're subsidizing the public parking monopoly with public tax dollars. Two, they're cash-strapped and deeply in debt. So when they talk about all these projects they're going to do, you're not seeing it. I didn't see the pedestrian pedestrian lights on Washington. They didn't have the $90,000. All we're seeing is studies. They're delaying. They're talking and pushing things forward. They're not going to do the Cobra Heads LED conversions because they don't have the money. Again, they're deeply in debt. And they need to be accountable also to the law. I think if you just read the media's report about how the DDA used to give TIF rebates to the taxing authorities back in the early 80s when they were first created, and then we were told by the DDA just last year that, oh, they don't give TIF rebates because their lawyer told them they didn't have to because they had debt, even though the history shows that they did, we need to have a DDA that, again, is accountable and trustworthy. And that's where I think the relationship begins, is in trust.
And the rest of you will get 90 seconds on this, too. So, Sabra.
Okay. I attend as many DDA meetings as I can because it's always good to know what people are saying. Was I not loud enough? I apologize. I attend as many DDA meetings as I can because it's always important to me to know what people are saying. DDA makes budget decisions using a lot of money. My relationships with the DDA is cordial, but I don't see anybody as subservient to me. Sorry, Steve, I'm just not big on hierarchy, and I think that that whole attitude of I'm the boss is offensive to lots of people, including especially me. I also think that the DDA is a tool for the city. It's not an entity that's separate, it's a tool. It's a way to really invest in the downtown. I would like to see that the DDA understood that investment is planning maybe, but it's really pouring that money back into making downtown walkable, livable, desirable, and functional. And it's not an easy task because the DDA thinks it's responding to council demands when it responds to one council member or another council member's requests. The DDA doesn't have the mission it should have, and it doesn't have the goals it should have because it gets distracted by whatever shiny object is thrown in front of it the same way we do. And frankly, they want to feel meaningful and vital to the city, and so they're trying to do stuff that I never expected them to do. Cordial relationships are important. They're important to me because that's how you work together. They are not the same as I do what they want or they do what I want. It's collegial.
I guess I'd anticipate my relationship with the DDA to be collaborative. The DDA is made up of a set of business operators, residents downtown, and residents of our city. They're all there in good faith doing what they can with the resources they have available to support the downtown. The downtown is a vital, important part of the city. I would be excited to work with them to achieve our mutual goals. I think that the DDA has done a tremendous job in making the downtown, in helping support the downtown change over the years from a shuttered place to a place that's vibrant and active. The DDA, they're not perfect, we're not perfect, but they are a group of folks, I think, who are doing their level best to move forward with the mission they have, which, again, is to support the development. And I don't mean that in terms of height. I mean the vitality and energy of the downtown. They support downtown infrastructure. When the alleys are falling apart, the DDA is there to help them. These are the city's alleys. I think that they are a resource that the city should recognize and embrace and work with. And I would expect that when treated with respect and openness, that they would they would reciprocate accordingly.
So.
Thank you. Even before I was on City Council, I started to get to know the executive director of the DDA, Susan Play, and I will say that we two had a very collaborative, collegial relationship. How that would change as mayor, for it to continue to have a genuine, for a mayor to have a genuine collaboration with the DDA, we need to depoliticize it first. I very strongly believe that the DDA is an important tool of the city, as Sabre said, but what it is more important than not just any tool, it's an economic development tool. They take care of the downtown. We don't really have similar economic development tools outside of the downtown. We don't really have anyone focusing on the city outside of the downtown. We need to educate our public on the role of the DDA and what they do. Last night I was at the opening of the Ann Arbor Summer Festival, and a retired business professor from University of Michigan, from Osprey Business, came up and said, will you please at some point explain to me what the DDA does? And this is someone who's been here for 30 years, doesn't understand the DDA. We understand it on City Council, but we need to depoliticize the relationship by educating the public on the value that they do. We also need to continue to hold them accountable. they are an agency. Like an agency, they have to publish their numbers. We need to check their numbers. We need to hold them accountable to what they're doing and what they say they're going to do. We also need to make sure that the DDA takes care of more than just Main Street. They serve other merchant associations, South U, State Street. We need to make sure that they are providing equitable services across the entire downtown.
Thank you. This next question, we'll start with Sabra. Regarding change in Ann Arbor, should Ann Arbor change in terms of population growth, in terms of density, and if so, give us an idea of what that would look like in 10 years.
Excuse me, time?
60 seconds.
I don't think we can decide whether Ann Arbor will change. Ann Arbor's going to change. I've changed in my life, and I assure you this city has changed too. The challenge we face is how to control that change. With a person, you try to control change by, you know, you take your choice, education, exercise, whatever it is you're trying to change. For a city, you have to decide how much change you can handle, where it is, what it looks like, and what it does for the community. For every tall building, we should be thinking about green open space. For every subdivision, we should be thinking about how walkable is it. We should be talking about whether to reinstitute neighborhood grocery stores, if that's a possibility, because people want to be able to walk to pick up stuff without having to take a car. We need to move away from the image of suburbia, this is my view, where you have giant parking lots surrounding a building, and we really need to talk about how mass transit and bike lanes and pedestrian access is going to improve our city. Ann Arbor is going to change. How do we make it livable? How do we make it enhance our quality of life? That should be in every single planning decision. It should be what we are asking. And do I think that that takes energy and effort? Absolutely. But I also think it's the most important thing we can do. Not plan for tomorrow. Not fix yesterday's mistakes. Not reiterate yesterday's mistakes, but plan for the future.
Thank you. Next, Sally, same question.
Okay. So, yes, change happens. We know it. We know that more density is coming, more jobs are coming. Ann Arbor will always be a fine place to live, work, and play, again, because the university provides stable employment, large number of jobs. Again, they don't take care of our infrastructure. It's not their job. In anticipation of the growth and the change that's coming, we need to figure out a way to upgrade our infrastructure, repair our sewer systems underneath. All these people, imagine what it's going to be like to flush your toilet 10 years from now if we don't repair the Orangeburg Lake with the water and the sewer systems underneath the ground. We need a plan to do this, and we need an economic plan to do this. The city simply does not have one today. I think the status quo thinking has been the University of Michigan is our economic engine. We don't need to have an economic policy or economic plan. We do. We are constrained. Our resources and infrastructure are wholly constrained right now because growth is happening. We need to lead and drive the economic development as our city leaders in order to support the growth that's going to come.
Same question to Steve.
You know, as everyone knows, I grew up in Ann Arbor. Right? I attended Pittsfield Elementary School in kindergarten, and my grandparents were founding members of St. Francis Catholic Church over on the stadium across from Tampa. I've seen a lot of change come to Ann Arbor. What I've seen that's been most disturbing, though, is how Ann Arbor has become more elitist. How we're always talking about affordable housing, but we're building more luxury housing. We're always talking about providing services, but we're just focusing on downtown instead of our neighborhoods. And we're talking about, oh, Ann Arbor's growing, but the last decade we actually lost population. And the only growth in Ann Arbor is 5,000 new students from U of M's increased enrollment because they're going global. So what will the future hold? I don't know. But all I know is that as mayor, I can only control for the time that I'm sitting there in the mayor's office. I cannot control 10 years out. I cannot control 15 years out. And we certainly have no idea what's going to happen to the air rights of the library lot because nobody has any idea what's going to go on there, and I think it's unfair to think that a future council has to somehow figure that out. My role as council member is to leave the position, as a mayor, is to leave Ann Arbor in a better place from the time that I'm there. In the future, we have no control. We have had so many plans. How many of you remember the North Main plan from the 80s when they were going to have a boulevard? Okay, I mean, we can plan and plan and plan, but we can only control for the time that we serve on council and as mayor, and that's what I intend to do, is focus on today.
Thank you. Christopher.
The question was, density change 10 years. I think density in the city is broadly speaking, a good thing. I think it is environmentally sound. I think it's economically sound. I think it's socially sound. I think it's environmentally sound, economically sound, and socially sound. I believe, too, that in 10 years, I envision a city that is recognizable, that we can see where if we look back in 10 years, we're like, yes, this is the Ann Arbor that we know, these are the neighborhoods that we know, this is the downtown that we know. Things have shifted, of course, but that at its core, it's the same, because I think at its core, Ann Arbor is in the right direction and not broken. I'd like to see things more efficient. I'd like to see services provided better. I'd like to see neighborhoods more engaged internally and with the city. I'd like to see more young people come and join the city, choosing the city, choosing Ann Arbor as a place to be for its future. But broadly speaking, I think we're in the right direction. I think we just have to continue, and you know, in 10 years, we're going to be okay.
All right. So...
Sally?
No, I'm sorry.
No, doesn't Sally get to answer the question?
I answered it.
Oh, sorry. My mistake.
It's okay. So a couple of you have actually mentioned non-motorized travel, and so this is a question from the audience. What is your plan to promote and fund non-motorized travel throughout the city? We'll start with Sally.
Okay, so this is a good question. I said in my opening that one of the key priorities is safe mobility for motorists, pedestrians, cyclists, and, of course, runners, because I'm a runner. Our plan is one that needs to be very prudent. As more people come to work, live, and play in Ann Arbor, I am in favor of bike lanes along our major corridors in and out of town. That said, a bike lane should not be merely painting a stripe on a road and calling it a bike lane. I've done some research on this recently, and I witnessed in New York City over the holidays, they have protected bike lanes. Protected bike lanes have a barrier. The bikes go here, the motorists go here, and there's a barrier. There's no question who's in what lane, who should be in what lane. We've also learned that when there are protected bike lanes, it drives revenue for the downtown and for shop owners as well. So I guess in short, my plan is if we're going to have bike lanes, we got to do it right. It's going to take time and money. We got to plan now. We got to have an economic plan to do it, but we got to do it right, not simply paint lines on the road.
In the Great Recession, we, in order to provide basic services, we reduced some of the monies going to non-motorized transit. That has recently turned around, and I'm delighted for it. We're using more of our state monies to support bike lanes, to support crosswalk design, to support crosswalk identification and signage. I'm delighted that we're moving forward in this direction and want to continue to do so. We have to ensure that every street that we resurface or reconstruct, that it's a complete street, that it is safe and designed for both, all three, drivers, pedestrians, and cyclists. This is all critical. Buffered bike lanes are an important part of this. I think, too, you know, we're having a bike share program upcoming in Ann Arbor, and I think that this is an exciting development. I think this is something that most of us would support. Bike share is a great for sense of place. It's great for getting around. I'm behind bike share 100%.
Zero.
At the last council meeting, at the budget council meeting, the council as a whole approved one of my amendments to council budget, which is increasing the amount of funding for non-motorized transit. But before that, long before that, we had passed the Complete Streets policy and the Complete Streets toolbox. And what Complete Streets does really is what Council Member Peterson said, and Council Member it's that kind of day, Taylor. You see, never ever sprain your ankle because you lose your brain. what my colleagues on council have said and will say, it addresses the need for streets that are designed for all modes of transit. But the other thing it does is address the need to design those streets so they deal with the proper speed. One of the challenges we face in this city is increased traffic from all the jobs that we've brought in. And we really need to talk about how we're doing that. So complete streets, increased funding for non-motorized transit, and frankly, increased pedestrian safety all require good planning, good design. And yes, yes, you can't just look at today. You have to look at what's going to happen in the future. And you have to anticipate where the increased changes need to be made. You have to be flexible and you have to be intelligent. It's a real challenge.
Next question to Steve. Repeat. Or same question.
Repeat.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Excuse me.
You got distracted. Sorry.
I'm sorry. What is your plan to promote and fund non-motorized travel throughout the city?
Okay. Plan and fund. The number one thing that I think that we need to do to address non-motorized travel in our community is to make sure that we have the staff that should be focusing on it. That's why if I'm elected mayor, I'm going to ask Eli Cooper to step down from the Ann Arbor Area Transportation Authority and focus on his job on non-motorized transportation in the city. He can't do both, and that's the kind of example. I voted against his appointment on the AAATA. He's not a resident of Ann Arbor. He lives in Livonia. And we've seen the fact that we have less staff getting the job done. So that's the number one in terms of a plan. As a walker, biker, and skateboarder, the number two issue is to make sure that our roads and sidewalks are capable of being used safely. You can't ride a bike down the road, if it's in the bike lane or not, if there's lots of potholes. My stepson has already blown out his tire twice within a week on his bicycle hitting potholes. And that is a problem. In terms of fairness, I want to make sure that all sidewalk gaps that are being specially assessed have 80% public funding. Some of them do, some of them don't. How is that fair to our residents?
Thank you. Quick follow-up. Do the three of you agree that Eli should step down from the AATA?
Louder again.
Start with Sally. Do you agree with
We didn't hear.
They don't hear the question, Mike.
All right. The question is, it's a follow-up to Steve's point about Eli Cooper stepping down from the AAATA. Do you agree with that?
Actually, no, I don't, because I thought there might have been a conflict of interest at first, and through my work in the last several months in studying ethics policy and conflict of interest, turns out he doesn't have a conflict of interest holding both jobs. And so on that reason alone is not a reason for him to step down. For performance reasons, that would be a reason, but I don't see his performance evaluations. I guess I could ask for them. I have no reason right now to ask to remove him from his seat. I don't think the conflict of interest argument holds up.
Thank you. Christopher, go ahead.
Sorry,
you're going to answer just to that, Christopher.
I think that he's no is the answer. I disagree. I think that, first off, it's the mayor doesn't have the authority to do that. He's a staff member. Mayor doesn't control staff. City administrator controls staff. Second, he's already duly appointed. Therefore, there's no authority even from staff to take him down. Finally, I think integration is good. I think communication is good. If Eli Cooper is a staff member, he knows what's going on in the city's transportation plans. Knowing intimately, knowing profoundly what's going on with AAATA, and having that cross-fertilization, having that communication, I think it augments both institutions. It's good for transportation within the city. It's good for transportation with the AAATA. I think his service there, the cross-service, is a benefit, not a detriment.
Same question you said.
I also disagree. I've got slightly nuanced reasons. First, he's not the non-motorized transit staff member. He's the alternative transit staff member. As an alternative transit staff member, what he's looking at is alternatives to using individual private cars. His expertise is national when it comes to transit work. I have no problem with his work there. Do I think we could do better on non-motorized? Yeah, well, we're struggling with non-motorized the same way other communities are. But in addition, I don't think that we can remove anyone who's appointed to a board or commission unless we have cause, and there is no cause. For any of us as mayor to consider that cause is, I want you doing something else, that's an interesting challenge that I don't think meets the smell test. So the final thing is that I really advocated for having a cross-fertilization of AAATA. I wanted Susan Basquette on it to represent the school board. I want people there from the University Transit Authority, the university's bus system, to represent the university needs. I want the city staff there for the same reason. We need that to really work, not just for you or me, but to reduce the number of buses on the road. And that means dealing with school transit, dealing with university transit, and really making that a system that can work not just for Ann Arbor, but for Ypsilanti, Ypsilanti Township, our partners who come here to work.
Thank you. And in fairness, since you have three disagrees, I'll give you 15 seconds to
First of all, I didn't say that we would remove him from cause. I said, as mayor, I would request that he step down. So that's number one. I think my colleagues missed that point. Two, I want to point out, my colleagues voted to put him on the AAA or the AATA before it became the AAATA. I voted against that. I think it is highly inappropriate for a city staff person who works under the direction of the city administrator to then become a policy person under the mayor's office. It's a conflict of commitment. Okay, he can't serve both two masters. And that's one reason that we're not getting the kind of service from him as an employee serving our city administrator, because he's also focusing on the mayor's policy initiatives as a person appointed, nominated by the mayor. That's the problem.
Okay, let's discuss commuter rail and light rail. Tell us about your vision for commuter rail and light rail. Let's discuss commuter rail and light rail. Please, in the time that you have, 1 minute, lay out your vision for commuter rail and light rail, and if you can, also touch on the idea of a multimodal station and where it should be. Christopher, 1 minute first.
60 seconds. The expanded rail service is vitally important to the future of Ann Arbor. It's important to reduce congestion. It's important for the environment. It's important for Ann Arbor's economy. We need to do everything we can to have expanded rail service in Ann Arbor. That means a new train station. I believe I'm for a new train station. I'm agnostic as to its location. I want the new train station to work. Where the federal government's experts, rail experts, say this is the location, it's going to work here, that's what I'm in favor of. With respect to internal light rail, I have yet to see the business case for it. I want there to be expanded public transit, expanded mass transit within the city so that people can travel where they need to within the city without using their cars. This is a priority for me. I'm looking forward to seeing a broader plan, particularly with the North Central South Connector. Whether it's light rail or another mode, I'm not certain. But in any event, I think that the expanded transit that I think is being touched upon by the question with respect to light rail is deeply important.
Thank you. Same question to Stephen.
Oh, God, how many times have we talked about this one? I love trains. I mean, my family and I have traveled on Amtrak to far distant states. But one thing that we have to understand is that Amtrak needs a lot of work in order to be timely. So that being said, that's out of our control. As it comes to commuter rail, that's fine. That's now in the hands of the Regional Transportation Authority. That has nothing to do with City Council. That is now outside of our responsibility, and I have no problem in making sure that the RTA takes on that business. As far as the train station goes, I was very much opposed to using city parkland and a 99-year lease with the U of M to create Fuller Road Station. And thank God we got that off the books. And I appreciate Councilmember Taylor's note that wherever the train station goes, we're going to support it, and I agree. I believe the train station should be across the tracks from the existing train station, abutting up to the Mishcon site, where there will be lots of parking. There will be an ability to create a park, along with whatever DTE is talking about with their development, and there is the future train station.
Thank you. Sabre, same question to you.
I don't think the city has any control over where the trains run. The track's already laid. When the trains run, completely out of our control. The only thing in the city's control isn't whether to have more train traffic coming into Ann Arbor. It's whether to put in a new train station. And note that I said whether to put in a new train station, because you all get to make that decision. That is not a council decision. When Councilmember Taylor and I worked together to pull away from the relationship with the university where it was going to build a parking structure on Fuller Road, I put in to that final resolution that if the day comes when there's a proposal for a train station, that you all get to vote on whether that gets built. And I think that's the most important thing here. You get to make that decision, not me, not where it is, not any of those things. It's your decision. The second thing is, I don't think we have the capacity to put light rail in downtown. Most of our streets are too narrow. But I do think we need to look at every possible alternative transportation mode we can in order to figure out how we're going to get around it quickly. What used to take 10 minutes takes 25.
Same question to you, Sally.
So I am very much in favor of a new train station. Ideally, I would like to see, because I think it would be the most cost-effective, to expand right where it is now. I sort of have these romantic visions of what a train station by the riverside would look like. We could expand over the rails into the Mishcon property. Don't know how prudent that is, but that is something that we have consultants who are doing a very robust public engagement process right now to determine whether that is a workable solution or if it should go somewhere else. But what my colleagues have said, this is going to be up for you to decide. But there are other stakeholders. U of M, what are their plans for the connector study? We need to co-locate what their bus rapid transit, anticipated bus rapid transit system, how that's going to impact the location that we choose, that you choose for the new rail station. With regard to the RTA, it's not out of our hands, light rail. We are stakeholders in the outcomes of the RTA. We need, Councilmember Taylor's head of state analogy. Mayor, as head of state, will very much have a voice in the future of the RTA.
So I have a few questions here about Ann Arbor Spark, and so I'm going to sort of ask them all at once. And bear with me because
how much time?
A few numbers.
What about timing?
Thank you.
This will be the last question, and then we'll go to closing remarks, okay?
Okay.
We're going to be here till 1.
No, we'll be here until about 12:15, and they'll get 90 seconds on this question.
Okay, so Spark's annual report claims it created 13,000 jobs, $1.5 billion in investment, and 547 companies. But the actual report shows a slightly different story, where there were only 685 jobs, $229 million in investment, and 149 companies. So the question is that you're all Democrats, but Spark was co-founded by our current governor, Snyder. Why do you continue to support it when the data in their reports don't match each other? And we'll start with Sally.
Okay, so I haven't looked at the data in the two reports. I think the question is the data right? Is the data wrong? Is not the relevant question. We could dig down and peel back all the layers and spend hours of doing it and be able to reconcile those numbers. I trust those numbers can be and would be and will be reconciled. Ann Arbor Spark. It is the only economic development corporation in town. I am on the board of the LDFA, and I support the contract that we have with Spark. And as you all know, I was very vocal several weeks ago when there was when City Council questioned whether or not we should remove $75,000 contract with Spark, and I was very much against removing that contract. Again, we need to grow our job base. Spark has grown jobs. We can nickel and dime on the actual numbers of jobs, but no doubt Spark is doing their job. We actually asked them to be accountable for the numbers that they reported to us. Turns out 752 jobs is what we got for the $75,000 we spent last year, and they were able to actually account for those with us. The larger question is, should we be doing an objective audit of these numbers? I think that's something that needs to be considered. I'm Our next LDFA board meeting is Tuesday morning, and I'm going to raise it with them. Doing an internal audit of the numbers takes money, and I think it is something that the LDFA should actually fund.
There's no question that the numbers that we receive from any of the entities with which we contract ought to be held to a rigorous standard. I understand that some folks think that the numbers that we've received are inaccurate. I would suspect that the folks who created the numbers have a counter-argument. I would, for myself, be eager to hear a full articulation of both. All that said, I think I'm coming from a place where I see value in state-supported economic development. I'm not in favor of giant tax breaks. I'm not in favor of boondoggles, if you will. But I think that we have a role to attract businesses and retain businesses in the state, in the city, rather, through Spark. I think we have a role for fostering a culture of entrepreneurship, educating folks with respect to entrepreneurship. That also comes through Spark. Right now, Spark is the mechanism to achieve these important city goals. And as a consequence, until it's plainly demonstrated that they are doing a poor job of it, I am in favor of it.
I don't want to pretend this is my area of expertise or that I'm particularly brilliant at the concept of economic development, because I'm not. My problem with Spark has always been that there isn't an easy causal relationship between what they do and what they claim to have changed. Because I can't see the causal relationship doesn't mean it's not there. It means that it's not easy to see. So if the numbers don't match the reality, that becomes an issue for us, and we need to check on that. Councilmember Peterson, Councilmember Taylor, I'm confident Councilmember Kunzelman, we all agree that the numbers have to be accurate and they have to be explainable. But one of the challenges we face is the creation of jobs. Does a business settle in Ann Arbor and hire more people without Spark? We don't know. Does a business grow bigger because of Spark? Spark can't prove it does. That's the part that makes this job creation so difficult for people like me to guarantee has happened, because Spark's not hiring people. And we can't say, that's it. We've done it. We can prove this because Spark did this and that happened. Everything is an incentive, in a sense, a training, in a sense, to new businesses. And those new businesses tell us how much Spark means to them. But it's not a clear box where you can say so many jobs were created, and we're challenging them to do that.
Steve. Boy, this is one that I've really learned to start thinking otherwise from my support of Spark and the LDFA. And the reason is, it has nothing to do necessarily with Republican or Democratic policies. What it has to do a lot is the state educational fund is being raided to provide funding, state funded, for economic development. They say they put the money back, but then why is our public educational system in such dire straits? They're using those monies. My wife is a public school teacher here in Ann Arbor, so I have to start thinking about that. Okay, they just cut many millions out of their budget. We're cutting the custodians, yet they're taking money from educational funds to fund LDFA and Spark. There's a relationship there that makes me somewhat bitter. They say they put the money back. I don't know what to believe, but it's a difficult situation. I do know that we have a couple more votes coming up when we talk about LDFA. They want to extend their term. They have to provide information that's going to justify extending their term. And that's where I think the hard vote is going to be taking place. I think Spark is somewhat corporate welfare. I think it deals a lot with, we have these impressions of capitalist cronyism. Mm-hmm. And I think, we need to start thinking otherwise. And I look to our state legislator out there to help us. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, we'll move to closing remarks and in interest of fairness. Let's start with Steve Kunzelman and go back.
A minute and a half.
All right. Thank you very much, everyone, for coming out.
Yes, 90 seconds, please.
All right. Thank you for coming out to this mayoral candidate debate. I really appreciate it, and I appreciate my colleagues here on council. One of us is going to be the next mayor, and we're all going to have to work together again. And we've been working together regardless of our differences, and I think that's important. That's the best thing for the city of Ann Arbor. But I'm running to give you a choice. If you have been a supporter of the past policies and the past politics, you have good choices. You have choices that have been praised by, you know, Conan Smith, county commissioner, praised by Joan Lowenstein, DDA board member, and praised by John Heath to the mayor of Ann Arbor. You have those choices. I'm offering you a choice of someone that is not in that camp, that has not been, you know, voting to for countywide transit where we're going to have buses pass cornfields, did not vote for a chandelier for the Justice Center using general funds, did not vote to put on, and I wasn't there for that vote, but to borrow $50 million for an underground parking structure that resulted in 500 additional parking spaces and four blocks of streetscape. That's the big difference. I run as a common sense Democrat, a fiscally responsible Democrat, and a Democrat that is living in low to moderate income neighborhood. I don't live in an upscale neighborhood. I don't, and not retired. I work full time. And I have a whole bunch of people that I represent that believe in me. I'm the only one on council that lives in a precinct where there's a mobile home park. So if you want to talk about affordable housing, if you want to talk about the working class, then vote for Stephen Councilman. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Sabre Briere. Those remarks. 90 seconds, please.
I'm not going to talk to you about my economic status. Anybody who's been to my house knows that we're not living in a posh neighborhood. The idea that we play against each other that way strikes me as absurd because we're not here to work for ourselves and we're not here for any other reason except to represent you. As a person who has been on this side of a vote and that side of a vote with the mayor over the years, important votes where I have agreed with him, important votes where I have disagreed with him, I want you to understand I make my own mind up and I don't belong to a faction. I don't even appreciate being told that there's a faction of against John Heath's stuff because, honestly, John is gone, and we should get over him. 14 years, he's gone. Get over it. Now we look at the future. And much as we may like John as an individual or we may agree with his policies, I'm not running against John, and I'm not running to be John. I'm running because I think that my ability to listen to you and you and the people that I disagree with and actually create a solution for the problem that you're thinking about, whether it's the people, whether you and I agree on the end or we disagree is not the point. The point is we work together. We work together to find a better way for Ann Arbor. And that better way is not one solution. There are so many solutions for our community. I don't want you to be misled by the idea that we either turn back or turn our backs on the past. I'm running for mayor because I really, really believe Ann Arbor is a place where you should not just live, but you should thrive. A place where we want the next generations to live and thrive as well. I'd love your support on August 5th and again in November. Thank you.
Thank you. Closing remarks, Christopher Taylor. 90 seconds, please. Thank you.
So thank you very much for this. This has been a pleasure. I love these forums. It's an opportunity to speak with our residents, and this is the good stuff. So thank you. I'm running for mayor because I think it's important that Ann Arbor's next mayor have the temperament, experience, and judgment, you know, to work every day to maintain and improve the quality of life for people in Ann Arbor. That's the bottom line. I think that Ann Arbor, that we're doing all right. We're in the right directions. We're not perfect. We have areas where we can improve. But I think we're doing okay. If I'm mayor, I'd like to work on two piles of things. I'd like to work on all the basic services that it's the city's pleasure and obligation to provide. Public safety, streets, snow, water, all these things, Ann Arbor, we simply need to continue with them. We need to improve them day in, day out. Like I said up front, if we were to do these things exclusively, our city would be a boring place. It wouldn't have the character that we have come to love. And so I think we need to do other things. We have progressive values that we need to live up to. So I'm eager to work with respect to affordable housing. I've been on the Parks Commission for 6 years. That is fundamental to our quality of life. Our parks need to be beautiful and well-maintained. I intend to focus on that. The environment, Ann Arbor is an environmental leader, and it ought to be. And so I want to do everything I can to help Ann Arbor lead on climate change. We can't solve the problem, but we can do our part, and we ought to. And finally, people in Ann Arbor need to get around. They need to get around in public transit. They need to get around in non-motorized transit, pedestrian safety. These things are terribly important, and I will focus on them. And our downtown needs to be vibrant and active. It's the core of our city. It makes, I think, all of our neighborhoods better. It has a character, and we need to maintain it. Finding that balance between the inevitable change that's going to come and between the character that we all know and love, that's the thing that we need to focus on, and that's what I'd be excited to do as your mayor come November after your vote on August 5th. So thank you very much. I appreciate the conversation. If you have any questions or follow-up, please just contact me. Thanks.
Thank you. And our final closing statement from Sally Hart Peterson.
Thank you.
90 seconds,
please. I want to address experience, and specifically that I've been on City Council for 2 years. I want you all to consider my full scope of experience. I've been in Ann Arbor for 18 years, and during this time, I've held leadership positions in the private sector, the nonprofit sector, as well as now the public sector. This cross-sector experience provides me with a fresh perspective, new resources, new knowledge, and new skills and abilities this city needs now while we're on the cusp of growth. This is why I was elected to City Council as supposedly an outsider 2 years ago, and that's why it makes me the best candidate for mayor. In the 2 years I've been on City Council, I've taken two initiatives that have the ability and potential to transform Ann Arbor. The first is the creation of the Economic Development Collaborative Task Force. This is low-hanging fruit. The need for a prudent economic policy has always been there. Just nobody has recognized it until now. The second thing is moving the city toward an ethics policy. This was something that was tried before, and it faltered because it was not the appropriate approach. I used an approach that was very careful and took step by step by step. Again, my pragmatic business experience helped me understand what was the appetite for City Council now to be able to digest something as big as a city ethics policy. Finally, I've spent a lot of time speaking with my constituents, town hall meetings, going door to door, and here's what you've told me. You want a mayor who is open and inclusive, a mayor who stands for the homeless and the housed, regardless of ability, one who is open-minded, fair, unencumbered by bias, and trustworthy. I will be that mayor.
Thank you. And I'd like us to give a hand to our organizers and helpers, Susan, especially, Nora and Mary, and my co-moderator, Jim Simpson, who made the... A big round of applause to our candidates, one of whom will be the mayor. We're going to have a Democratic mayor. Thank you very much. Our next forum will be next month, July 12th, second Saturday of the month, 9:30 here. It will include all of the candidates, Democratic candidates for Ann Arbor City Council. So I hope you'll join us for that. And if you have other information you'd like to share with us, please look us up on Facebook or go to our website. You can always send us things for posting. Thank you very much. Have a good day, everybody.